Hey, what's up? This is episode 12 of the Everyday Bowhunter Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Manley. This week, Dan and I talk about the end of the archery season here in Pennsylvania. It just ended on Friday, but our season effectively ended last Sunday. We did a lot of hunting between the last podcast and this one, so we got a lot to talk about. My target buck at 5 yards, Dan's adventure and the blood trails we followed, a little bit about our buddy Jevin, and one thing that's not in the podcast is our buddy Andy. Had quite a few opportunities this past week. He was on the last podcast, actually two podcasts ago, and he really made a go of it. I saw a lot of great buck action, had a good shot on a buck, but just fell a little short because it was a little longer. So anyway, sorry to hear that, Andy. Better luck next time. And all of us have the late season to look forward to do some more hunting here in Pennsylvania. So with that, let's dive into this episode and let's go. Welcome to the Everyday Bowhunter. I'm your host, Mike Manley, retired Green Beret turned bowhunter, joined by my brother, Dan Zimmer. We're here to share tips, stories, and talk gear, all from our unique points of view. Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned bowhunter, I think you're going to like it. So let's go. Hey everyone, this is episode 12. This is Mike. This is Dan. It's been 2 weeks, Dan. Well, lots happened in the last 2 weeks.
It really has. A lot of peaks and valleys, we'll say.
Yeah, a lot of peaks and valleys. We spent a lot of time up at the camp, did a lot of mountain hunting, and you know, really felt the pinch this year on the low deer density. I still saw a lot of deer. Saw a tremendous amount of deer, and even, you know, got, you know, some engagements going on, got some blood trails getting followed, and we had a lot of adventures for sure. But we're gonna talk through a little bit of that. We're going to dig into your highs, lows, and lessons learned, and things that you thought that turned out great this season. Now, I'm going to do, you know, you're going to do the same thing for me. Now, for those listening, you don't know, Pennsylvania's archery season, as we're recording this, ends tomorrow. It ends on a Friday. Yeah. The last day I hunted was Sunday. It was past Sunday. It was the only Sunday hunt in Pennsylvania you could do for during the archery season. I think they have a rifle one then, right? So
yes.
Anyway, we were, I was up the whole week last week. You were...
Went up Wednesday night.
Wednesday night with our dad and your buddy Jevin. I should say our buddy Jevin now. He's hunting with us now. And you're our buddy, Jevin. You're our buddy.
and my buddy and me.
We can talk a little, you know what, why don't we start off and talk a little bit about those guys. They had some hunting, you know, adventures, and you know, our dad got a doe,
right?
What day did he get that? And I'm lost on the days. It doesn't really matter.
When you hunt as much as we have in the last 3 weeks, it kind of all runs together.
It's all blurring together. Yeah.
Or and, one of the days he got a deer.
I was out still hunting I wasn't up that, so that's what it is. You guys were up while I was still working, and I didn't come up till that Friday night then. You guys were up ahead of me that week before, not last week, but the week before. And so just to let you know, our dad hunts from the ground. He puts up a little like portable blind out in front of him.
He hunts very similar to me.
So they don't actually hunt in a blind. It's kind of a portable, throw something up in front of you, you know, put a tree seat on, and you could talk more to that, Dan. But that's how he hunts, and he was able to seal the deal on one. So you know more about that hunt than I do. So what happened with him with that?
So I got back a little earlier than him, and when he got back, he had what looked like a football player does the black on, out under the eyes, but it was blood. And I just kind of like looked at him. And I was like, wait a minute. You got a deer. He says, yeah. And we went out to the van and we started the process. But he was actually packing up, from what I understand, he was hunting, was actually packing up to come back to camp, you know, for the afternoon so we could get ready for an evening hunt. And I guess when he turned around to face the tree, his bow was off to his right and everything. And he was starting to like gather stuff up and he looked up to his left and there was three doe standing there. One ran off, two kind of stood there and made the fatal flaw of being too curious. And he smoked one real good. And he just moved to what? The Wasp three blade fixed head 125s.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, that thing put a hurting on that deer. It didn't go, I think, like 30 yards. And he, you know, she expired. And it was where he was hunting was relatively close to the road. So, which is great for him and downhill. So for a 70-year-old guy, which is extremely physically fit for a 70-year-old guy, the guy's a freak of nature.
Which we'll talk about that later on too.
Yeah. He jogged her back and, you know, we got the processing happened and got her scunned out and quartered up in no time, just like normal. And yeah, I was happy for him. He was the first to kill and reluctantly, I say the only.
The only.
But and this is the way it is. This season was very challenging.
Stay tuned because there's way more to that story. And so anyway, so then Jevin had kind of a little bit of bad luck on that end. I don't want to malign him on the show here. Just it's bow hunting. It's what happens. He hit a buck, contacted us to come, you know, help him. We did.
Right.
We got on blood right away. So had some really good blood and we tracked that quite a ways. And just, it's one of those things.
We tracked it until we couldn't, it stopped. The blood ran out.
Yeah.
And normally when the blood runs out, it's either going to be what? A deer very close by or it wasn't a fatal shot, you know?
And you know, what's funny about that is that Jevin talking about how that all played out. He had had a buck come into him, a younger buck come into him earlier. And he actually tried to take a shot on that buck and he misjudged the distance and he hit in front of the deer actually couldn't find his arrow. But then as he's later in the morning, then I guess it was closing in 11 o'clock or something. And he went and you can correct me later if I'm wrong, Jevin, but he was packing up. He was packing up and he said he basically had, you know, was getting his stuff together to get down the tree and turned around and there was a buck standing there. And he's like, oh crap. And there's a, you know, like an 8-point sitting in front of him. So he turned around.
I think the moral of this, quartering to and directly below him, which is
a very tough shot.
Oh, a hard shot and, you know, lessons learned.
When you're in the heat of the moment, you know, and, you know, that one of the things, if you are a beginner and one of the hardest shots you make, everybody wants to go super high in the tree. And that's why the last 2 years, I should say, I've been hunting about between 15 and 18 feet. You know, I've had probably one of my hunts was only like 12 feet this year. But that, you know, he goes really high in the tree. And I think he said he was almost 30 feet in the tree.
Yes.
So that is a massive angle to that shot that you don't think about when you're doing that. You're trying to get above the scent line. And he's on it. He had actually a huge incline that he was sitting on. That tree was on the edge of a bowl. So there's a big drop. It was probably a 15, 20 yard drop there.
Yes.
From his tree. So if he's not up high in that tree, the deer behind him are looking him in the eye.
Yes.
So he has to be high like that. But
I actually questioned that. I was like, why were you hunting so high? What was the point of that? And he schooled me. He said, well, Dan, the way that it kind of came up behind me, if I didn't go that high, the deer coming in from behind me, and they traditionally do sometimes, would have been all but eye level with him, and he needed to get up a little bit higher, which then I understood.
Yeah, that's a great rut funnel that he was hunting. It's a great mm-hmm. one. Traditionally, the does run that, and the bucks run right behind it, and it's great for the rut. And he's seen it. He's killed deer down there because of that. And
yes,
it's a great spot, but they do come both ways during the rut. You never know which way they're going to come.
Yeah.
But that decline in front of him, then because of that height in the tree, just amplified that angle to the shot, I think.
You know? Yeah. Yeah.
And that's just us spitballing it. We don't know, you know.
We weren't there. Yeah.
Yeah. We weren't there. We'd have to ask, you know, Kevin would have to come on and give us some details, but I think that's pretty much what he said. And
yeah.
Like I said, we had great blood. We tracked it for a while. And, you know, as you do, you stop at the last blood and other guys would fan out and circle around. And we got to a point where we weren't just circling around. We were out.
We were grid searching at that point.
And trying to find it. And then they actually came back to camp and they actually went back out.
Them two, because me and you went back out hunting. Yeah.
We went back out hunting and they went, our dad and Jevin went and they hunted all evening then. And they wanted to look into the later part of the evening because he had a lighted knock. And he said that it was stuck in the arrow did not go through the whole way. You could see the end of the shaft and the knock. So they were looking for that lighted knock. So that's, you know, but they never did find it. And that's a shame. And
yeah,
it's just one of those things that happens in bow hunting. We've suffered through this a few times this season.
Me this season also. So, you know.
But I mean, so
if you want to start the interrogation.
Yeah. I mean, so Dan, so when we moved, we went up there, the basically the last 2 weeks, we're looking at traditionally where we hunt, just to give the people, you know, information. One of the things that you'll see in these deer studies and stuff is that the doe families traditionally come into estrus at the same time every year. And so we have seen the rut. I think that we said the earliest we got during the rut was like the 6th of November, I think was the earliest deer. And then the latest deer that we had gotten and during the rut was like the 12th. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah.
So, yep. Generally speaking.
Yes.
And over the years. And so we planned our, you know, hunt around it. I hunted the whole dang week last week. And these guys came up Wednesday night, like Dan said before. And so we're looking for those rut funnels that we had traditionally hunted and going after, put ourselves in the positions where we know those pinch points, those ambush points. And then, so when you first got up to camp, what were you thinking about? What was your methodology for getting out there and doing that?
Well, I have my hot spots, and knowing that at any minute rut could kick in, they could start chasing at any minute. I started hunting, and in previous episodes we talked about ambush. So I started off kind of hitting my normal routine areas, and you know, to some success. So with that success came a lot of frustration. But all right, so pretty much early on in the last 2 weeks, I got set up and I had a doe come right to me within 15 yards. She looked right at me and I was in my full-blown second gear, and she just kept on feeding by. Like she looked, it was like looking through a ghost, you know, and I thought to myself, I'm not going to take her. I'm not going to shoot her because, you know, it's, you know, rut could be kicking in. There could be a buck. Well, just the way she was like dilly-dallying and feeding, I was like, there is no buck. She never looked back. She wasn't antsy. She was so relaxed. And I waited till she was pretty much quartered away from me. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to take her. I'd like to fill my doe tag. So, you know, she was about 25 yards, and I put it on her and shot. And I saw my arrow come out strange, and it was like flailing, and it flailed and it hit her front shoulder, and the arrow helicoptered off onto the ground. She freaked out, bucked and went crazy and ran off and snorting me and blowing at me and going on. And I could not wrap my head around what had just happened. I mean, this is 25 yard shot, guys. Like, this is amateur hour for me, you know? And I stand up and I look at my, you know, past my curtain that I put up in front of me, and there's a fletching laying on the ground. And I, what in the actual hell? So on the release, my fletching caught my rest in the bow. Yeah, at the front up there.
And it peeled it off.
And it caused my arrow to flail, even in that short distance, which you were kind of like texted at that time. You're like, yeah, that's crazy. That shouldn't affect that much in that distance. Well, I'm telling you, she was the way she was quartered away from me. I was aiming, you know, pretty much right there behind the shoulder, and it hit, you know, like 8 inches forward into her front shoulder. And it was the back end of the arrow that hit her and took off, spun around.
So it actually flipped in the air almost. Is that what you're saying? It flipped in the back end of
her? The back end was coming in at her like this.
Like an angle. Like
if she's standing here like this, the arrow came in like this. And then it helicoptered off and just laid ever so nicely on the ground.
Basically, yeah. peeled left, and smacked against her shoulder versus hitting into her. And if listeners don't know this, but when we were at Andy Muster's camp and we talked in the last podcast, Andy was having some arrow flight problems. And Dan and I were watching, and we were like, "Hey, man, I think you need to do some paper tuning. I think there's something wrong with the flight of your arrows." And he ended up going to Extreme Archery here in York, PA, and paper tuned. And he had a large rip in the good band. A large rip that you don't want to see. So he had a major rest alignment problem and fixed it. And he was surprised because he had already gotten a doe.
the technician there said, it's truly amazing you were able to even kill an animal like that. And, you know, here it is, you know, in season, whatever happened from when he had been shooting before to this, he knocked something off. And, you know, luckily he got the time at the shop, because at this time of season, it's hard to get time from a technician in the shop, but he luckily got in and they got squared away, and he was a happy camper. So that was great. I'm happy that he got it, you know, worked out, because that could be extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
You know?
So that reminds me of that, how that arrow went out. But that's, you know, that's a shame. That's a shame that you missed that you weren't able to get that doe. So,
but the good thing is, Mike, I did not hurt her. I scared the crap out of her. And I mean, that dude, she freaked. It was like a fucking bronco. She freaked out, but I did not hurt her. You could look at my broadhead. It never deployed. It was perfectly, you know, clean, not an ounce of dirt on it. And there's that. So, you know, moving forward, I was agitated by that, a little ticked off. Went hunting in a different spot that evening, and throughout that realized where I went wrong. I actually had my bolt set up wrong in my crossbow. I have a Raven, and up at the front of the Raven, there's two cams that your arrow actually rests on there. It does not sit in the rail. And you got to have one fletching down to be able to go through those two cams like so, okay? Well, 4 o'clock in the morning, going out, setting up, you know, early morning brain, I had the fletching sticking out like this and one up the top. And when that flew out, it hit the cams, and that's what happened. So, I mean, a little backdrop. When we went home on Sunday the week before, Mike stayed up, and that's when he stayed up for the entire week. And we all left. He must have got bored and went out to go shoot his bow, get some work in, you know. Next thing you know, my phone starts blowing up, and I'm getting these hot texts. Hey, man, my bow just blew on me. My line stop broke, and my cams are going to go inside out. It's going to break. And, you know, when he showed me the line stop was bent completely over and the string was, like, wedged in it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, my.
The draw stop, the string had actually cut, not the bowstring, but the cables. One of the cables had come off the cam, had come off the cam and almost tore the draw stop off. In fact, the draw stop was the only thing that kept the thing from blowing up. Yeah. So I was drawing and I'm like, what the heck is that sound? I've been having this problem for a while. You know that. I was telling you, hearing these weird sounds.
That noise. Head. Yeah.
And you literally said to me, when you had your Matthews, you said, is it your Matthews? You said they had that before.
No, it was my Bowtech. Okay. It was Bowtech. And it was hitting them line stops right there. It would go like make a noise. And, you know, I got it checked out at the bow shop. They said everything was fine. And then I sold it to Andy Musser. And about 30 shots in, the limbs blew on him. So I feel like total horse crap about that. But we evoked the warranty and got it fixed. He got new limbs put on it, and no harm, no foul. On that note, Mike says, I'm dead in the water here, and I'm supposed to hunt all week long. And I said, you're not. And this is why you're not, because you got one hell of a brother right here. And I said, look, I got the Raven. I got the Raven up there, and I have my compound. I said, I know that you don't want to go to a crossbow. I know that. I'll use the crossbow for the rest of the season. Go grab my Elite and see if it works for you.
Now, this
we're very similar statured guys, so.
Yes. And this is something that doesn't happen now. You know, one of the things that I was worried about was I did not want to change Dan's stuff up. You know, I didn't want to change his zero and all that. So I was like, hey, on your way up, and I was thinking about leaving and going, this is an hour and a half. It's not terrible. I was going to go drive home and get my crossbow, because it's like the only option I had at that point. And I did not expect that I would, the draw length and stuff. I didn't have to change anything. I picked up Dan's Elite. What model is it?
Elite Embark, which is, they don't make it anymore because there was copyright infringement with PSE, John Dudley.
That's right.
So now it's, I forget what the heck they call it now, but it is called something else. They still make that bow. And as you know now, can attest to, it's a hell of a nice bow.
That is a heck of a nice bow. Now, when I was drawing my bow and wondering what the heck's going on, it sounded like a screen door when it does that. You know, that's been, you know, used over years. And it's just kind of, and that's like, I was looking all over the bow, like at the cams and stuff. And I put a little mineral oil on to try to get light lubrication and saying, what the heck is going on? And here it was just kind of working its way out. And I didn't know, you know, and I took that shot. I took a shot and then I went to, I did not like how the bow felt. The shot came out bad. I went back. I did a dry draw. I drew the bow to see what the heck is going on. And that's when it goes boom. And that's when the string popped or the cable popped. And if you don't know, there's the bowstring that goes, is what you fire your arrow off, and then you have the cables that work the cams that are the interior bowstring. And anyway, that's what popped off, and my draw stop that sets your draw length on that Bear Alaskan is what caught the tie and kept it from completely falling off, and it's still hanging there by a thread as we speak because I haven't gotten to the shop yet. Well, but I pick up Dan's bow. Yeah. I go outside at the camp. We have targets set up there. First, I put my arrow on with a field point. I go out. I draw it. Everything feels good. I shoot 20 yards. I hit center mass. I'm like, huh. So the other arrow I had sitting there was a broadhead one, because we have a broadhead target that sits right next to our field point target. And I draw. Boom. Center mass. I'm dead ringer. I go on to shoot probably about 20 arrows. And it's like, I'm drilling it. I'm like, I cannot believe that I just picked up my brother's bow and we're shooting the same. You know, don't have to change.
That's pretty incredible.
Don't have to change the draw length, anything. It's just, I'm like, this is perfect. and I'm using a different kind of release. Yeah. And I think that made a difference, you know?
Yeah.
So
that, that definitely makes a difference. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm using the finger, the thumb release, and you're using a regular trigger style release. And so that worked great. And the thing is about this bow, compared to my Alaskan, it is dead silent. I'm talking when you're in the stand and you're drawing on a deer, it is so quiet. And I was like, I'm getting rid of that bear Alaskan. I'm getting rid of it. It's gone.
Look, as much as I want to, like, you know, gloat about how great I think my bow is and how well I had it sighted in, you know, I am just so grateful that that worked out, because it, you were like, you know, it would have been a hassle, and then you hadn't really shot your crossbow, so you would have had to go through a whole sight-in thing, because you were like, you know, and here's the thing, we were helping this year
2 years.
On being back in the compound, so this worked out quite well, I think, and I am grateful that you got to use it and put it to good use. And like I said, I have a Raven. I have a $1,200 crossbow, if not more, $1,400 crossbow sitting there. I want to use it. I like using the compound too. I like both of it. I like to do whatever I feel like doing in that moment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it just kind of dialed it in for me. Hey, like, and what that does for me, Mike, is it alters my hunting style. So it kind of actually gave me a little more freedom, you know, where with the compound, I had to be a lot more strategic. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, because that draw on the ground is so tough.
But so, yeah, it's.
So anyway, that.
Sorry, you're freezing up. You're freezing up there.
Yeah. But anyway, we were able to, you know, salvage my week. I'm very appreciative of Dan helped me out like that, and it worked out. That was the one in a million chances that would happen. I used my own arrows. I did not have to change my arrows, anything. So that was great. So moving on back to you then.
Oh, back to that. So the next evening, I was a little frustrated with the missed doe, the blunder, we'll call it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to grab the shotgun. I'm going to go turkey hunting. The week before, I had seen two separate flocks in this area. And I go to it. I'm not even in the woods 10 minutes. And I hear them beep, 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 beep. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So I found a big tree, got tucked behind it, started calling. That whole flock came feeding right across to me. And at one point, they were too bunched up, so I didn't want to shoot. And a gobbler kind of, you know, it was a pretty decent beard on him, you know. He kind of started separating from the pack, and he kept stretching his neck out, and he's scratching along and stretching his neck out. And I thought to myself, all right, Joker, you stick that neck out one more time, you're going to get it. And he did, and I shot. And he flopped around, stood up, and he ran up on top of the knob. And I'm sitting there like, what in the actual hell just happened? And he's up there, and he's making this really, really intensely loud, sounds like a hard, like wood-on-wood knock, you know. And he's letting all the other turkey know, danger, danger, danger.
A danger sound.
And I thought, right, and... you know, when he's doing it, his neck's up in the air, and I shot again. And he takes off running.
And that was at a pretty good distance, that second shot, right?
There's no... The second shot was like 50 yards, yeah. So you're right. That was...
Yeah, you're talking about some
kind of a Hail Mary. Shot.
Yeah. You get a lot of spread on your shot.
Yeah, it was a Hail Mary. So when I went up to where I originally shot, I shot low. Because it was little feathers, and that's like on their breast, you know. So I must have hit low down around the breast, and you know, with their, you know, the amount of feathers that they have, if you don't hit them in the head, you're not getting them. So I wandered around a little bit looking for them, and then off to my right, I catch out of the corner of my eye, the other half of the flock moved out to the power line, and I threw a haymaker at them too, just because I was mad. But so they took me tomorrow off of, up and flew up across the power line uphill going. But you know, that's what it is. It is what it is. That's hunting. And you know, if those of you guys that haven't turkey hunted before, it is some of the greatest hunting on the planet. I absolutely love turkey hunting. It's one of my favorite things to do. It's right up there with archery hunting, if not a little bit more. That's how much I love turkey hunting. So to get some action, it was pretty damn cool, and I'm grateful for that. I'm blessed, man. I got some great situations this season, but my final stand, we'll call it, was the one that broke me a little bit emotionally and mentally, put a hurting on me. So I go to a spot and go ahead.
I was going to say, you got it. You're not going to give me credit. You're not going to give your brother any props for that spot.
No, because I was there the year. I was there the year before with Dad and cousin Mark. So no, but yes, thanks, Mike. But so I go to a spot that Mike knows pretty well and was there a couple evenings prior, actually. And I said, you know what? I personally have a feeling it's more of a morning hunt because it's hard to explain. A mountain comes down to a point and then it bowls around and then the whole mountain ridge starts and goes out through the valley. Well, right there on the side of that point, it's all moss. It's like damp. It's weird. It's a weird transition area. And I just had visions of deer coming out of that bowl and up onto that ridge, up onto the flat to eat, you know. And I'll be a son of a gun. At first light, I sit down. I pick a spot, you know, in some thick stuff, at the edge of some thick stuff. And I sit down and I get myself set up and I hear a coyote howl. So I reach down in my bag. I mean, and this thing was very close. And I grab my headlamp, put it back on. And now I hear ch-ch-ch-ch through the leaves. But it doesn't take very long before I realize this ain't the coyote because I hear what sounds like bark ripping. And then my mind shifts. Is this a porcupine? Like, what am I hearing, you know? So now it's getting lighter and this body's moving directly in front of me at 15 yards. And I'm like, okay, I can't really make out what this is yet. And it's just feeding along. But it dawns on me, the noise of bark ripping that I'm hearing was it chewing on acorns. That much I could tell and hear and see, you know, because I could see it, its leg pulling and getting an acorn, and its head going down, getting an acorn and chewing on it. So it's now a couple minutes have passed and it's just getting light enough. And this thing's like kind of walking up away from me just a tiny bit, but his butt's to me. And when I say his, I get the scope up. And, you know, when you look through a scope, you can now see better. And I see antlers off one side. And it was legal and I went, I'm going to shoot him. So I brought down. I waited and waited. And he turned and quartered him, just almost the same setup as the doe that I missed. And he quartered and whack, I hit him and he tore off like he was shot out of a cannon. Then I thought, he done. This is a good hit. And, you know, I waited about an hour and I was like, okay, I'm going to go check out the blood. And where it's at, there's just brown hair. There's no blood. And I'm like, what the hell? Okay, well, I'm using a fixed head. And, you know, they all say that blood starts a little bit later with a fixed head, you know. So I go up onto that flat and sure enough, I run into what looks like a murder scene. And the murder scene went about 70 yards and it was a lot of blood. And then I saw where he bedded and there was blood in the bed, but he's not there anymore. So I said, I got to back out. So back out, go to camp. Dad was there, got Jevin on the radio via text and waited for him to come up. So now another hour and a half went by and we went tracking. We put our tracking shoes on and we went and this deer started going uphill. Now, a lot of you would know, but the beginners, a fatally wounded animal is generally going to go downhill to water. And this thing was now going up the mountain and it put a pit in my stomach. So we've got back on blood. Again, a lot of blood. And then we found another bed and more blood in that. And then from that point, the blood specks were just little tiny specks and it went straight up the mountain. We went and followed until we couldn't find any more the whole way. We were at the top of the damn mountain, which was a hell of a daunting task because it was way up in a rock wall of a mountain. So moral of the story is after time to kind of think about what had happened when I sighted that in, I sighted it in that my 20 would be at the top of your bullseye. So that at 30 and 40, with a fixed head, I could get out to 40 yards. He was uphill for me when I shot. I think I hit him up in that no man's land, That's it. I never recovered this animal, and it makes me sick. And it ruined the rest of my season because I have an extreme appreciation for these animals. I have an empathy for them, which a lot of hunters don't, but I do. And it is what it is. I am who I am. And I'm not, I'm not afraid to admit that.
Did you? You didn't
grow up. No, I was done. It ruined hunting. I considered that my tag. I wounded him. I could not rationalize. I could not fathom wounding another animal. I was not in the right state of mind. And being there in that state of mind meant I could have made another bad shot because of not being fully dialed in. And so I hung it up and I called it a season. It hurt me and it still does. I don't like wounding animals. I want to lethally and humanely take them out as quick as possible. And I know that animal's running around with a pretty hefty sore spot on him. It's pretty bad. So it is what it is. I have to come to terms with it. And I am, it's part of hunting. I know that. It's not going to deter me from ever hunting again or archery hunting again, but that was it for me. And it is what it is, and I'm grateful for all you guys because you guys all kind of supported me and knew where I was mentally and left me alone, didn't push me, and I appreciate that.
Well, it shows a lot of respect to the animal to not go out there and try to shoot another deer after you did that, and that takes a lot of humility. Sure. And compassion for the animals, and I think that shows how that's the brother I know. So it hurt to see you hurting, but there's not one of us that we wound a deer. We're just it's heartbreaking, and that's why I am very, very I am very careful about my shots, and I probably give up some shots because of that. In fact, I know I do. Because I don't want to wound them. So and I kind of have an eye tracking problem. To get out past 30 yards, I'm kind of trying to see right. So, but anyway, that kind of ended your season there then, huh?
Yeah. And you know what? This season was not a failure. I learned a lot and, was different. Tactics that we kind of adopted for this season, me more so playing thermals a lot more and e-scouting and stuff like that. I really put those tools to use this season, and I found a ton of success because of that. And I am blessed, man. I'm extremely grateful for the opportunities
The night before that is a great lesson learned thing that you just said, Dan. The night before the hunt, I said, hey, why don't you go down here? I scouted this, but it's more of a ground setup because there's not a lot of trees in there to hunt out of. It's a lot of dog hair. It's like you said, it's that open with the moss in there, but it's that dog hair stuff too. And just a great terrain. It's hard. Yeah. I'd love to be able to show that terrain here, so people could see it because it's such a neat thing. And my wife and I had scouted it a couple of years ago and there's a lot of doe bedding in there and thinking that a buck would come through there was something we both thought. And you were saying, oh, the winds are going to be bad for that spot tomorrow. And I said, no, I think they're good for that spot, man. And then he went out and hunted it and you almost had yourself, good.
Well, I think I was looking at the winds objectively wrong because of how it's like a three-way system in there. You know what I mean? But the wind was absolutely perfect. I was 15 yards from this deer and he fed along in front of me for 20 minutes. It was textbook. You couldn't, damn.
Yeah,
damn. It is what it is.
Hey, I have.
Yeah, it's frustrating. But you know what? It.
But I mean, that's you know, the lesson is, hey, put yourself in the right position. It's just that last part that could be the toughest part for any hunter. You know, it could be extremely tough.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I've been archery hunting for quite a long time, man, and you know, I've had a lot of success, and I've had failure, and this one just hurt a lot more than most. And hey, again, I'm coming to terms with it. I'll get over it. I'm a big boy. I'll get over it. But so on that note, would you like to shift to you? And I mean, we kind of got a little detail of how your season went with the bad stuff. So would you like to talk about some successes that you had?
Well, through that whole week, I stayed up the whole last week, and I hunted every single morning and evening. I had kind of mapped out a strategy for myself to where the end of the week, where I expected the rut to be more kicking in, that I had planned. I had left a certain spot to learn, as we kind of talked about in the early part of the season with the podcast. I let some spots alone that I really wanted to hunt bad. And I used my discipline, and I didn't go in there and hunt them until the time that I thought was right. And on every single one of them, I saw deer except for maybe two hunts through the week, or three hunts through the week. I didn't see any deer, but every other occasion, I at least saw deer. Sometimes the deer were off in a distance. They weren't close, but I hunted top of the mountain spot that I was expecting to be kind of a rut funnel. All I had come up there to me was a spike buck that hung around for a while under, you know, right next to me. You know, the closest he got, this is one of the things that tells me I was doing the right thing through the season and picking the right spots, doing the scouting, reading the hot sign and putting myself next to that hot sign. In fact, I just scouted the hunt and winged it two different times, you know, did that kind of active scouting and got myself in good positions. But they had that deer come up there. I think the next morning I went down to a spot where I had a mock scrape and new doe flowed through there and fairly close to the road too. And, I was in the tree, I don't know, set up maybe 15 minutes and it's still dark, of course. And I hear coming through the, you know, through the leaves and boom, 5 yards down below me. I have what I think is a buck. He goes to about 10 yards. And turns, and just by the lay of the land, and as he turned and looked my way, I could see his rack. You know, I'm like, oh, a buck. It didn't look like a huge rack, but I could see the rack, you know, and I was doubtful if I could identify whether or not that was a legal buck at that time. So I of course, let him walk. I didn't take any shots on him because I didn't know. He walked away. As he walked away, you know, he's going so slow that I'm like, and this is another thing that happened through this that I'm still baffled by. I am completely baffled by this because of this time frame. We are now, we're talking November, whatever it was, the 5th through the 12th kind of hunting time frame. And this deer is just probably 60, 70 yards from me still, and it's light now. He just hung out that long. I call, I do a grunt, I do another grunt, I do a snort wheeze, I do a bleat, yada, yada, yada. Go through all this over a little period of time. He does not look my way once. Nothing. I am like, what the heck? A little bit later on, I had a doe come by, but the closest she came was maybe, I don't know, 40 yards. In fact, I thought she got my wind a little bit because she reversed course on me. But fast forward to, I'm really thinking that these rut funnels are down near the water. We see this a lot in the lower part of the valley we hunt, that the bucks really push the does against the water and the road to kind of, you know, corral them in and keep them isolated. And so I said, I'm going to go down here, kind of scout this area out on that Sunday. And I went down since it wasn't able to hunt. So I went down there. I looked around. It's kind of near a spot that both you and our dad hunt before. He calls it, what, Fox Hollow or something like that.
Right.
And I go down there and I find a serious funnel. I'm talking jaggers that are really thick, trees that are really thick, and just a tunnel trail going through it. And I'm saying, in the area, I had scouted around this probably a half-mile square area, and I had hit so many rubs, scrapes, you name it. And I'm thinking, if that buck is anywhere in the morning chasing doe, it's going to be down here. So I'm in that spot, I think Thursday morning, and because now it's the time when I'm thinking they're going to be moving. And it's, I don't know, 6:15 or so, and I'm sitting in a saddle. And like I said, I'm in a very tight spot. I probably have, you know, very narrow shooting lanes and stuff. I look down and I see a head feeding, totally quiet, never heard it. Of course, I'm deaf, but it looks like a four point. I'm like, oh, there's a four point in front of me. And no, he turns. I say, he's got brow tines. He's a six. And by this time, I'm starting to say, season's almost over. I might take this 6 point. So I draw and just get myself ready. And I'm waiting for him to present himself because he's in this thick stuff. And I'm like, he just needs to take a couple steps. Same thing happened to me last year, which is very frustrating. And he came, he was about at this time, this whole time, he's like 10 yards away. And I think he just, you know, he just thought something wasn't right too. Tail never came up. He actually just turned himself around, continued to feed really slow, and walked away. I let him get, you know, a little bit past where he couldn't just turn and see me the way it was in there. And I could see him just a little bit. So I grunted at him. I did all the same calling stuff that I did with the other deer, stuff that's traditionally worked year over year. Obviously, you know, we have a lot of experience with calling, and didn't turn his head. I snort wheezed him three times and he didn't even budge. And I had regretted not having my rattle bag because I really wanted to rattle at that point. I was like, what is happening here? Because I'm condensing things through the week. Through the week, I probably saw four different between, you know, spikes and 4 points. I don't know what it was, spike and 4 point year. This young deer. And I was like, this deer's not responding to me. Well, then fast forward 2 hours later, I have two doe all of a sudden come into me fairly quick. And they're 2 yards. They're right below me. I could spit on them. I was only about 15 feet in the tree. Never looked up at me. I drew on them like, okay. And I said, like you talked about, Dan, and when you were talking about your situation with that doe, that these doe were looking back. And I said, that 6 point was just, he headed their way. They came the same direction that 6 point went. So I'm thinking, oh, here we are, November 9th. I'm expecting this buck to come back or another one, who knows, back through on these doe because they're looking behind him. They're continuing to do it 3-4 times. And so I let him go. I let him go past me and I let down. And I sit there and I wait. And nothing ever came. So it's one of those tactical decisions you make that I could have taken a doe there real easily. You know, I probably could have freaking taken my arrow and stabbed them from the tree. They were so close. but jumped down.
When you think
kamikaze style, you know, go ahead.
So, hey, look. When you know, when you have that experience of watching in hunts prior, seasons past, and you see a doe and she's looking behind her and she looks uneasy and you have a buck following, when you see that and you have doe in front of you, even though you have a doe tag to fill, that buck's coming. You don't shoot him. You know what I mean? That's just how I am. I personally,
2 years ago, that's how I killed my buck. 2 years ago, I had the doe coming.
Yeah.
I had four doe, you know, within 15 yards of my tree. I let them pass because they were all looking and they were moving. They got past me. And it was a full 10 minutes later when that buck came in and he was beautiful and got him.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm kind of trusting that instinct And, you know, if I miss out on some dough, that's just what it is.
So let's just go here. As far as lessons learned, aside from lessons learned, what do you think was your greatest, your biggest accomplishment for the season, this season? Something that you set out to do and it pretty much came to fruition.
Well, last Friday, I had waited to hunt a spot where I had been scouting this big buck, and you've seen the pictures of him. In this area, I've been tracking three different bucks in an area. They're a bachelor group, and they basically have stayed in that core area through the season. I saw, talked about in the last podcast a little bit, I think, about me camouflaging my gear and following up an area to check out where a buck went that I watched him, you know, I watched him come in on me, and I was a little far away, so I tracked down where he went. That was an eight right. point that I call him medium. I don't really like naming deer, but just so mm-hmm. happens in this area, you got a 4 point, you got a small eight, and then you have, I think he's probably a 10 point. This big buck, you know, antlers come way forward. He's wide, extremely wide, way out past his ears. I'd love to know. He's definitely over 20 inches. So I've been chasing this buck for the last, I've been after him, I should say, or enthralled with this buck for 3 years. So this deer has been up there for a long time. So I knew, based on my scouting, that there's another habitual trail that they follow to go up into bedding, and that does follow in there as well. And this is a very, very tight area. A lot of the saplings from it being logged before, so it's really, really thick. And so I've saved it. I bookmarked it and said, I am going to go into this spot Friday morning if the winds are right. I need a west wind, and I need the thermals to be dropping still, because, you know, the thermals are going to rise, but they ain't going to rise, you know, based on how cold it was. I'm thinking thermals ain't going to rise till like 9 o'clock. So I'm thinking they're going to come through early, and yeah, thermals end up not rising. I was walking out of there and the thermals were rising at 11 o'clock. But so I set myself up in this spot on this funnel that is they have to walk through. It's very tight. And I am just put my tether on, lock of the tree. I hooked in and I got my red light head lamp on. And it's pretty cold morning, and I hear the same thing I heard as I said the other buck, that other buck. I hear that, except this is heavy hitting. And I'm like, son of a bitch, something's coming. So I freeze in the tree, and here comes, once again, what I say, 5 yards. So here he comes. He's a big body deer. He walks directly in front of me, in front of my tree, with my headlamp shining right down on him, and all I see is the monster rack. It's him. And my bow's on the ground. I have a headlamp, and what's the ethics of shooting with a red light? It was, could have happened. So, because he was big. But, so, I mean, and same thing happened, though. So he turns and goes up toward the bedding area that I had been tracking forever. And he's up the hill from me, and it's just like the other deer. It's getting light, and he's still close by, and I'm calling, doing all the different calls, and nothing from this deer. Fast forward an hour later, actually, I think it was like 2 hours later, I hear this rustling and coming down same trail, but it seemed like it was the same trail. It was a little bit behind me, but heading towards me. And I look over, and there's the 4 point that I've been tracking in there. And he is sniffing the ground like a bloodhound. I never heard anything like it. He just literally sounds like a freak, like a beagle on some rabbits, you know? And he was really on the ground, and he came down past me, and he came under my tree behind me, maybe 2 yards. And goes past me, and just hugging the ridgeline. And then I called him trying to see what he would do. Nothing. Didn't give a crap. And I'm like, this is November 9th, man.
It's like these deer were like call-wise this season, man. Except for out
in other areas in PA, you didn't hear that. In other areas of PA, you heard it was banging. Things were going great.
Yeah, I mean, that was our area. I mean, even out in Bedford, that 8-point that I snort wheezed in, the one that I missed, that my arrow hit a twig and deflected. He would not come into the grunt, but he came on a rope, you know, to the snort wheeze. But you're right, nothing was really an answer.
Nothing. Yeah, I had nothing. This is the very first year that I have ever hunted in those mountains and not had a deer react to my call and turn ahead, make a move, something. I've never had it happen before. And this is the most, I've never experienced anything like it. It's extremely frustrating to me. And I mean, they could be turned on right now and just running crazy this week. And we're sitting at home because that was the time we took off. You know, that was extremely, extremely frustrating to me. And I had hunted all these spots that I had worked out. And I guess my biggest success overall is that, along with being able to put myself in the window where I thought that deer was going to be, if just not the time, you know, is that I literally have so much intel for next year already in the time frame.
Yeah.
The thing that I said this at the beginning of the season about planning your season out, and it is just held true, is the intel you need is so time sensitive because things change so rapidly through the season that the beginning part of the season, there's one dynamic. In the middle of October, there's another dynamic. You know, late October and the beginning of November is another dynamic. And then rut, completely different dynamic. So all those things you have.
It's like all bets are off. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to put yourself where those deer are in that moment. And there's some great places that you can put yourself in travel routes that you don't have to be on top of bedding. And I did that several times where just looking at the pinch points and the known travel routes that come through. And what I learned in a couple spots is I need to change where I'm hunting next year to put myself closer to where they're going to be in daylight. And so I'm very happy. And, you know, our dad said to me, hey, you know, why are you restricting yourself, you know, not wanting to shoot these smaller deer and stuff, you know, why are you doing that? And it's my own personal, you know, prison of standards that I just have over the last couple of years. And you know how I am, Dan. I don't just shoot anything. And if I don't get something, that's my own cross to bear. And it is what it is. Cause I want to do something more. And the great thing is the places that I've been hunting is the deer have been not dying during rifle season. Which I can only hope for again, you know, and hopefully can get out there.
Or go get them in rifle season. You know, it's.
I mean, I know a couple great spots to hunt in rifle season, man. A couple really good spots.
No doubt. But, so, hey, I mean, because of time here, you want to start thinking about wrapping her up?
Yeah. Hey, you know, the one thing that we talked about a lot here is the lessons learned. And I think we're going to continue to talk about them in future podcasts. We have a lot of stuff we haven't talked about in this one, as far as a lot of the small stuff that makes a difference. And I think that we'll be able to take a lot more of the detailed lessons learned as far as scouting, as far as, you know, put where you're setting up the exact spot locations that I kind of alluded to here. And Dan, to put ourselves in good spots. Just, you know, it's a matter of timing. You know, a lot of times that daylight to dark time frame is right there. I mean, that's when they move. That's the time of day that they see the best. That's when they want to move in that low light time frame. So we'll dig into that more here in future podcasts.
Hey, I just have a little quote I would like to share with, you know, the audience. Is So I learned this a while ago, and I've been eating some humble pie here, and a lot of it comes down to patience, you know. And this quote reads like, it's not how long you're patient for, it's how you act while being patient. And I got humbled this season, and I have to act accordingly, and I can't be selfish, and I can't act righteous or anything. I need to hold myself accountable for the mistakes I've made and own them. And it's all part of it. This is part of the sport. Again, it's not how long you're patient for, it's how you act while being patient. And, you know, it's a good lesson right there.
It is a good lesson. You know what I just thought of? When that six point was near me, remember me saying I had your bow, I had the Elite, and you have your rest does all the work that goes down. And I had drawn in that buck, and I'm just sitting there waiting for him to get to a place where I could shoot him. And of course he didn't do it. So I tried to let down softly, and I didn't know that your rest automatically falls down. It doesn't stay engaged, stay up. Mm-hmm. So it fell down, and the arrow falls on the platform there, the arrow platform, and it goes ding, ding, ding. And I'm like, and it's dead quiet, almost no wind, you know, and the puck didn't even jump at that. I couldn't even jump at that. I could have yelled at him, hey, hey, get over here. maybe that would have worked.
That's the new grunt call.
That's the new grunt call. So, hey, you.
Yeah.
Hey, get over here. Come here. Because I did it twice. Because when I went to put the arrow in, after I got it out, I banged it again. I was like, dude, I don't care. He's totally in his own world. But anyway, hey, thanks for watching. It's been 2 weeks. You know, we're going to try to get back on track. When we're out hunting, we ain't thinking about podcasting. Sorry, guys. So we wanted to do up a camp, but sometimes, I mean, we are hunting. You're getting up. We're getting up at 4 a.m. And then after we're done dinner, it's 8:00. And guess what? We're going to bed probably at 9:00. So it's just one of those things with hunting. It's hard to get it in. So anyway, I don't know how the pro guys do it. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, no doubt. But hey, they're different animals than we are, and that's why we are who we are. It's the everyday guy. So it's, you know, it's, but hey guys, hit that like button, subscribe. Really appreciate everything, and thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.